Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Let's go back to sleep, Rahaf. We're so tired.
See the bunny sleeping till it's near the moon. Shall we wake them with a merry tune? They're so still. Are they ill? Wake up soon.
That's Ms. Rachel, dancing with Rahaf, a three-year-old double amputee from Gaza who lost her legs in an Israeli airstrike. Ms. Rachel's videos are watched by millions of children around the world. She's been called the Mr. Rogers of our era. And she hasn't shied away from speaking out about injustice, most notably about Gaza and the plight of Palestinian children.
It's never been wrong to say not to starve children and not to bomb children and not to kill 15,000 children. What's wrong is to be silent.
Ms. Rachel will join us in our studio. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A delegation of Hamas officials has arrived in Egypt for a new round of talks on securing a ceasefire deal for the Gaza Strip. Their trip comes as Israeli forces press deeper into Gaza City as part of a plan to forcibly displace nearly 1 million Palestinians and push them into camps further south. Over the past 24 hours, at least 8 Palestinians, including 3 children, have reportedly starved to death due to Israel's months-long blockade on food, including infant formula. Meanwhile, Israeli attacks over the last day killed at least 123 people and injured nearly 440 others. Among the dead are Palestinians bombed by Israel as they sold water on the streets of Gaza City.
This street, which is full of displaced people from Beit Hanun and from all over the Gaza Strip, was hit by a missile. There are 3 martyrs here, women and children, selling water. As you can see, here's the blood and here's the shrapnel. We are innocent people sitting in our homes, not knowing when this war, this genocide by the Israeli occupation army, will end. Enough people, enough world, wake up. We are dying here day after day, martyrs for no reason.
Meanwhile, Israeli settlers have shot and killed another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. 35-year-old Tamin Khalil Reda Dawabsha died of his wounds this morning after he was shot by a settler in the town of Douma, south of Nablus. According to a Palestinian rights group, he's at least the 10th Palestinian killed by Israeli settlers since the beginning of the year. Protests and vigils continue worldwide, demanding accountability and justice following Israel's targeted assassination of Al Jazeera correspondent Nasser Sharif, along with 4 of his colleagues and a freelance journalist outside Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City Sunday. Here in New York, hundreds gathered outside the New York Times Tuesday, decrying what advocates say is the Western media's complicity with Israel's genocidal war on Gaza and the relentless killing of Palestinian journalists. In Texas, protesters mobilized outside the Dallas Morning News headquarters, demanding U.S. reporters speak out against Israel's attacks on the media. Similar actions took place in Los Angeles, outside Fox studios and other U.S. cities, including Washington, D.C., where demonstrators rallied outside the offices of NBC, Fox, ITN, and The Guardian. Protesters gathered in Mexico City in solidarity with Gaza journalists. Mexico is the deadliest country in Latin America for media workers. Meanwhile, the Hind Rajab Foundation and the Palestinian Center for Human Rights have filed a complaint at the International Criminal Court against Anas al-Sharif's killers. The United Nations confirmed Tuesday UN officials met with the chair of the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation at a U.S.-hosted event on Gaza's crisis. It was the UN's first direct contact with the foundation since Israel barred international humanitarian aid distribution in Gaza, turning over control to GHF, a shadowy U.S. and Israeli-backed organization whose aid distribution sites have been widely condemned as death traps. Over 1,800 Palestinians have been killed while attempting to collect food since GHF took over Gaza's aid operations, with at least 19 aid seekers killed yesterday alone. On Tuesday evening, Israeli peace activists in Tel Aviv condemned Israel's starvation campaign against Gaza as they protested outside a hotel where GHF officials were reportedly staying.
We oppose every action that the Gaza Humanitarian Fund are doing. They must close now. Aid must flow to the 400 points that are existing with UNRWA and all the other agencies that are ready to do their work so the food comes to everybody.
Top diplomats from 26 nations, including many U.S. allies, are calling for urgent action to end Israel's siege of Gaza. The foreign ministers of Australia, Belgium, Canada, France, Italy, Japan, Norway, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, the UK, and others write in a joint statement that Israel must take immediate, permanent, and concrete steps to restore large-scale access for the UN and international humanitarian aid groups. They're also calling for the opening of border crossings into Gaza and an end to lethal force directed against civilians seeking food at U.S. and Israeli-run aid distribution sites. Germany and Hungary did not sign the statement, nor did the Trump administration. Meanwhile, New Zealand's leader has condemned Israel's actions in Gaza as utterly appalling and unacceptable. Prime Minister Christopher Luxon made the comments earlier today after lawmakers debated New Zealand's plan to recognize Palestinian statehood.
I think Netanyahu has gone way too far. I think he has lost the plot. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing overnight with the attack on Gaza City is utterly, utterly unacceptable.
In Sudan, at least 40 civilians have been killed in an attack by rapid support forces on a camp sheltering displaced people in Darfur. RSF fighters Monday reportedly stormed the Abu Shouk camp, which has been devastated by famine, opening fire on homes, executing civilians. Others were killed by stray bullets. This comes as cholera is ripping through displacement camps across Darfur, with hundreds of cases reported and at least 80 deaths. UNICEF says more than 640,000 children under the age of five are at risk of contracting the deadly infection. President Trump's holding virtual talks with European officials and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky today, ahead of a bilateral meeting Friday in Alaska with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Ahead of today's talks, all EU leaders, with the exception of Hungary's Viktor Orban, signed a joint statement warning Ukrainian borders should not be redrawn by force. Joining the call was Poland's Prime Minister Donald Tusk.
Ukraine cannot lose this war, and no one has the right to put pressure on Ukraine when it comes to territorial concessions or other decisions that would smell of capitulation.
President Zelensky once again rejected any ceasefire deal that will require Ukraine trade territory for an end to the war, a concession Trump is pressing for. On Tuesday, Zelensky downplayed reports that Russian forces had advanced 6 miles deeper into Ukraine's Donetsk region. But Ukraine's military is warning of a Russian troop buildup for a new offensive set to begin in September. The first U.S. National Guard troops have begun deploying to Washington, D.C., a day after President Trump announced a federal takeover of the D.C. police force. Federal officials say some 800 National Guard troops will be deployed alongside 500 federal law enforcement agents. On Tuesday, The Washington Post revealed the Trump administration is planning a so-called domestic civil disturbance quick reaction force, composed of hundreds of National Guard troops set to rapidly deploy to other U.S. cities targeted by Trump. The force would be comprised of two groups of 300 soldiers permanently assigned to the force stationed at military bases in Alabama and Arizona. The Trump administration Tuesday released its annual human rights reports for every country in the world. Gone from the documents are entire sections on human rights abuses, including gender-based violence, attacks on LGBTQ plus and women's rights, and discrimination along racial or ethnic lines. Several of the updated reports omit evidence of abuses in countries whose leaders are allied with President Trump. The U.S. report on Israel was slashed by over 80% and removes almost all criticism of the Israeli government, with no mention of the humanitarian catastrophe caused by Israel's blockade of Gaza. A report on Hungary no longer documents extensive government corruption nor a crackdown on LGBTQ plus people, instead concluding, quote, there were no credible reports of significant human rights abuses, unquote. That's the same conclusion in the executive summary of the 2024 report on El Salvador, which has been slashed by three quarters and no longer cites abuses that many asylum seekers previously used as their evidence for their cases. By contrast, the 2023 human rights report on El Salvador, written by Biden's State Department, cites arbitrary killings and forced disappearances, torture, life-threatening prison conditions, attacks on the independence of the judiciary, widespread gender-based violence, and more. On Tuesday, State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce defended the changes.
We weren't going to release something compiled and written by the previous administration. It needed to change based on the point of view and the vision of the Trump administration.
Meanwhile, the updated report on South Africa alleges the mistreatment of white Afrikaner farmers, while Brazil's human rights report criticizes the prosecution of Trump ally and former President Jair Bolsonaro for attempting a coup. A panel of federal appeals court judges ruled Tuesday teams with the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, may access the personal data of millions of U.S. residents held by the Office of Personnel Management and the Departments of Education and the Treasury. The 2-1 ruling by Republican-appointed judges on the U.S. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals comes over the objections of labor unions, which sued to block DOGE's access to the databases, citing federal privacy laws. DOGE will now have additional information on addresses, employer details, and other statistics on tens of millions of people, as well as student debt for more than 40 million borrowers. The White House is planning a far-reaching review of Smithsonian Museum exhibitions in order to ensure they align with President Trump's interpretation of U.S. history. That's according to The Wall Street Journal, which obtained a letter from a White House official instructing that Smithsonian exhibits should be, quote, accurate, patriotic, and enlightening, ensuring they remain places of learning, wonder, and national pride for generations to come, unquote. This comes after the Smithsonian removed references to Trump's two impeachments during his first term in office. Meanwhile, CNN's reporting the White House moved its official portrait of former President Barack Obama from a prominent position that could be viewed by White House visitors. Portraits of George W. Bush and his father, George H.W. Bush, were also moved out of public view. A federal judge in New York Tuesday issued a temporary order mandating the Trump administration immediately improve deplorable conditions faced by immigrants in ICE's shadowy detention facility on the 10th floor of 26 Federal Plaza in Manhattan. Immigrants have described being held in cells for days or weeks at a time after ICE agents took them into custody at routine immigration appointments or court hearings, often in the same building. They've been confined to overcrowded cells without access to showers, medication, or a change of clothes, forced to sleep on the concrete floor, left hungry, and without contact to the outside. The order also directs Trump officials to ensure people detained can make free, unmonitored, and confidential calls to their lawyers within 24 hours of being taken into custody. And in Los Angeles, a coalition of labor and immigrant rights organizations held a series of boycotts and protests Tuesday against corporations like Walmart, Home Depot, and Target, which activists say are complicit in Trump's mass deportation efforts. Martin Manteca is an organizer with the California Gig Workers Union.
Trump and his administration continue to break the law. They're the ones breaking the law, ignoring the judge's decision, and continue to kidnap people. So we're going to resist because we are on the right side of history, and we want everyone not to be afraid, not to go into hiding, but to come out on the streets, live your lives, go to work, and fight back.
The 24-hour boycott came after intensifying immigration raids at Home Depots and other locations that are known gathering places for day laborers. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, Ms. Rachel joins us in our studio. And if you don't know who she is, go find a kid wherever they are all over the world. They'll tell you who she is. Stay with us.
Let's go back to sleep, Rahaf. We're so tired.
See the bunny sleeping till it's nearly noon. Shall we wake them with a merry tune? They're so still. Are they ill? Wake up soon.
Let's pretend to sleep.
Wake up, little bunny.
Rachel dancing with Rahaf, a three-year-old double amputee from Gaza who lost her legs in an Israeli airstrike. The song was Hot Little Bunnies. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, if you've spent any time around young children in recent years, our first guest may need no introduction. The Washington Post has called her the Mr. Rogers of our era. Her YouTube channel has about, 16 million subscribers and more than 10 billion views. In January, Netflix began licensing episodes. Her show is now the seventh most watched on Netflix in the first half of 2025. We're talking about Ms. Rachel, the children's entertainer, educator, and mother who's become a worldwide sensation over the past 6 years since she began posting videos for toddlers on YouTube. Much like Mr. Rogers before her, Ms. Rachel has not shied away from speaking out about injustice, most notably about Gaza and the plight of Palestinian children. She recently wrote on Instagram, "I want my taxes to help children, not kill them. I want my taxes to feed children, not starve them. I want to build a better world, not bomb it," unquote. In another Instagram post, Ms. Rachel said she would refuse to work with anyone who's not spoken out against the treatment of Palestinians in Gaza. She's also featured Palestinian children on her show. So now we're going to go back to that video we just played of Ms. Rachel singing with Rahaf, a three-year-old girl from Gaza who lost her legs in an Israeli airstrike.
Let's go back to sleep, Rahaf. We're so tired.
See the bunny sleeping till it's nearly noon. Shall we wake them with a merry tune? They're so still. Are
Video of Ms. Rachel and Rahaf has been liked over a million times on Instagram. Well, today, Ms. Rachel, that's Rachel Griffin Accorso, joins us in our studio. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's an honor to have you here. Can you talk about who Rahaf is, this little girl, how you met her, and why the children of Palestine are so important to you?
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. It's an honor to speak with you. Rahaf is an adorable, bright, loving three-year-old girl. She came here through the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, PCRF, and she was evacuated with her mom, Isra, and they're getting therapies and treatment at the hospital and living with a host family. And she's absolutely delightful. She's similar to three-year-olds I've worked with because she loves to pretend and she's just adorable and just taking in the world and so sweet and innocent. And then she's unlike three-year-olds I've worked with across communities because she has lost her legs. She's away from her dad and her brothers right now.
There in Gaza.
Yeah. And yeah, just seeing her, and also she's having more of her human rights respected right now. So she's getting medical care, and she's getting food, and she's absolutely thriving. This girl is going to change the world. She has changed the world, and she's going to go so far. She just has that chance now because she has her human rights respected. And I saw videos of her in Gaza on the hospital floor. I saw videos of her looking extremely depressed. And one of the things her mom told me is, thank you for helping her with her mental health, because in Gaza, she just looked so distraught. And she's 3 years old, and three-year-olds are so delightful and happy. And she just, yeah, it was just really, really hard seeing her in Gaza, how she looked and the amputations. And she's been through so much, and she's three.
You rarely make overt political statements, but instead stress helping children regardless of where they live and who they are. What made you decide to speak out more forcefully on the Palestinian children? And what's been the reaction that you've gotten from your millions of followers?
Well, as an early childhood educator, I know what children need to thrive. They need food, and food is being blocked from them. They need water, and water is being blocked. They need to be in school, and they've been out of school for 2 years because most of their schools have been bombed. They need medical care, and most of their hospitals have been bombed. So I see precious children, and I see them just like I see my children. And I see all children as precious and equal. My deep care for children doesn't stop at any border. And I saw these human rights violations, and I had to speak up because it's who I am. That's who I am as Miss Rachel. I love all kids.
And you've also spoken out on social media about Ariel and Kfir Bibas, Jewish children whom Hamas took hostage. And after the Bibas' deaths were announced, you wrote in a post in February, quote, "My heart is with the Bibas family, the Jewish community, and people all over the world who are grieving. We need to protect children always." But despite your speaking out that way, you've been labeled an anti-Semite by some organizations, pro-Israeli organizations. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so that's really painful because obviously it's not true. And I care so much about Jewish children and all children. And It is difficult to receive criticism, but I know who I am, and that pain will never compare to the pain of not speaking out during a genocide and what would happen if I didn't try to help. And obviously, that pain is nothing compared to a mom in Gaza who I put myself... I sat with a mom from Gaza. She is a teacher like me. And I sat with her while her child doesn't have legs. I sat with her while she FaceTimed her children who she can't eat anymore on FaceTime with them because they're so hungry. And I pictured my little boy there with my husband. And I pictured myself with my little girl having lost her legs and have that happen. And I will do anything for her. And I thought, what would I want her to do for me if we were switched? Because I was just born here and she was born there. We're not different. I saw her look at the pride on her son's face when she saw her beautiful sons in Gaza. And she had the same pride that I have when I look at my wonderful Thomas. And she is so broken about what's happened to Rahaf, but so supportive and sweet, and all she thinks about every day is getting back to her boys. And I think as a mom, the most excruciating thing in the world would be being separated from your children. And I think about Israeli moms who have children still held hostage. And I think about mothers all the time, everywhere, whose children don't have what they need. Because if I couldn't provide milk for my daughter, and it was miles away, and my baby, I have a 6-month-old, and she cries for milk, you know, and every time I feed her, I think, why is milk miles away and not getting to them? And my son said, Mommy, could the kids of Gaza, could they take a car to get the milk to the babies? And our kids are watching us. They're taking in what us grown-ups are doing, and we're not protecting children.
So Rahaf's mom is with her here. Why weren't her father and brothers able to come?
I believe Tariq can speak better to this, but I don't think that men are often approved to come. I'm not sure. They weren't approved.
And we are going to ask him in a moment. The Palestine Children's Relief Foundation, Tariq Hylet, is the director of the Treatment Abroad Program for Palestine Children's Relief Fund, and he is joining us as well. Tariq, can you address that issue? Why isn't Rahaf's family all together here?
Yeah. First of all, thank you, Amy and Juan. Hello, Rachel. It's good seeing you.
Great to see you.
So, obviously, it is a really difficult situation, and Rachel was actually 100% correct on the reasoning as to why we were not able to bring her other children and the father. The medically evacuating children needs the approval of the Israelis to be able to take them out. And actually, both Rahaf, her mother, and her siblings and father were all rejected the first time that we tried to evacuate them. And it didn't take until 3 other months of advocacy and petitioning to get the approval to at least Rahaf and her mother to then finally receive that approval from the Israeli military to be able to take them out and evacuate them with all the other children that we brought here to the United States. And it's really unfortunate because I don't think in any other war, conflict, genocide, would you ever see the side that is causing the harm on these children have to provide the approval for them to be medically evacuated? You know, I think about it in the context of Ukraine and Russia. You would never need the Russian approval to take a Ukrainian child out to receive medical treatment. However, it's unique in this particular case where we do need the Israeli military's approval to take out an injured child that was injured by the Israeli military.
And Tariq, your organization has evacuated over 250 children out of Gaza, but the estimates are that there were the over 40,500 children have been injured since October 2024, and that includes 940 children who have had limbs amputated. What kind of medical care is necessary for amputees, especially for children amputees?
Yeah. So we are the largest Palestinian-led organization to medically evacuate children. And that is only 250 children. I mean, that is a drop in the bucket. And if we had the say on how we wanted to treat these children, it would not be evacuating them all the way to the United States to receive a prosthetic device. What we would do is part of our other programs, like our medical missions or our infrastructural program, where we build hospitals inside of Gaza, like the only pediatric oncology center currently in Gaza.